Good day, and welcome to the Targovax Strategic Update. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Øystein Soug. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and welcome to this conference call. My name is Øystein Soug. I'm the CEO, and with me today, I also have CFO Erik Digman Wiklund and CMO Magnus Gjedoberg on the line from Helsinki. Now, the purpose of this conference call is to shed some additional light on the press release that we sent yesterday called Targovax Strengthens Focus on Oncolytic Virus Development Program. So let me just recap what's in that press release before we go to Q&A, which is going to be the main part of this session. Now, what has happened over the last 12 years for us is that there's been lots of things happening on the virus front. 12 months ago, there was an interest in viruses, but a certain uncertainty about their effectiveness. But during the last 12 months, much data has come out on viruses from us and from other companies, and particularly in combination with checkpoint inhibitors, that has or is starting to establish viruses as a new class of therapeutics for cancers. And also in the aftermath of these data over the last 6 months, there has been a flurry of deals, both licensing deals and M&As, that really shows that Big Pharma has opened up their eyes to the possibilities of oncolytic viruses. And also when we travel to meet investors in Europe and in the U.S., it is a strong interest in the virus, and that interest has over the last 6 to 12 months also been increasing. Targovax is developing an oncolytic virus, but we're also developing a cancer vaccine called TG. This cancer vaccine has been developed in resected pancreatic cancer. And a few weeks ago, we revealed clinical data in 32 patients in pancreatic cancer, resected pancreatic cancer, showing and confirming a strong signal of efficacy. The next step that we had envisaged for the TG vaccine was a controlled randomized trial in combination with the standard of care, which is a chemotherapy cocktail called gemcitabine and capecitabine, or GEMCAP for short. But what happened 2 weeks ago at ASCO was that new data came out showing that another chemotherapy cocktail is superior to GEMCAP. This cocktail is called FOLFIRINOX. And they actually showed an improvement of more than 2 years over GEMCAP, almost a doubling of the median overall survival. So that means that the trial that we had envisaged to start in resected pancreatic cancer would then either be with an obsolete standard of care, or if we chose to change the standard of care to FOLFIRINOX, we would have a trial that would only read out in 5 or 6 years, and that would be unpracticable for a small biotech like ourselves. And that means that we have to take a step back and reassess what is the best step forward in terms of developing the TG cancer vaccine. It may be in some form of pancreatic cancer, or it may be in some other indication of mutant RAS. As we have mentioned several times before, almost 30% of all cancer patients have a cancer which stems from a mutated RAS. So there are clearly many other opportunities that we would need the next weeks and months to explore. And we will, during the autumn, come back with an update on what we think are going to be the next steps in developing the TG vaccine. But as a consequence, in the short to medium term, the resources that are freeing up by not doing the TG-102 trial that we had announced will then be allocated to strengthen and speed up the ONCOS development program. So that's in short what we have decided to do Operator, please open up for questions.
Good day and welcome to today's conference call. Thank you. If you would like to ask questions, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask questions. We will take our next question from Jonas Persus. Please go ahead.
Hi, hello. Thank you for taking my question. So obviously good news for patients, but probably puts you in a position where one needs to think about what to do next. So I was just thinking, could you provide a bit background on how you came to this conclusion? Obviously, it takes a bit more time for the consensus to build up. Given the positive data at ASCO, one could expect that this clinical consensus could be reached quite quickly, but I was just wondering what kind of, person, people you talk to, what kind of, sort of opinion leaders you talk to about, how fast FOLFIRINOX actually could become a standard of care. And, for example, as far as I recall, that this particular treatment has certain side effects that might sort of be an obstacle. So just wanted a bit, if you can provide a bit more detail about how you came to this conclusion.
Yeah, clearly, this was a big topic at ASCO, where Magnus was present. So, Magnus, maybe you would want to make some comments about to what extent people at ASCO believe this is going to be the new standard of care.
Yeah, sure. So, obviously, there was a presentation of the data. I don't know if the person asking the question was at ASCO, but afterwards there was a panel discussion, and you had people from Europe, experts from Europe and experts from US on the panel, including, for example, Professor Eileen O'Reilly from Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York. Professor O'Reilly was one of the experts who helped to rewrite the US guidelines last year for resected pancreas. And her and her colleagues' comments were that these data were quite remarkable, and they were likely to be changing standard of care within a fairly short period of time. So that's the first bit. And clearly, the discussions afterwards followed along the same lines. We have in Targovax an international advisory committee, and we're going to meet up with those later on this month, and at the end of June, to talk a little bit more about the comparison of the FOLFIRINOX study data and, for example, SPAC4, which I don't know if the person asking the question is familiar, but there was a big study, European study called SPAC4 that was published about 18 months ago. So we will look at some of the differences. I think you also asked or made some reference to difference in side effects, and yes, there were more in the FOLFIRINOX arm. There were more patients who stopped due to toxicity, but actually looking at grade 3 and grade 4 side effects, there was actually no difference between the two arms. The FOLFIRINOX, just to explain to all the listeners, is a combination of 4 chemotherapeutic agents, and that was compared with gemcitabine, so one product, and there was actually no difference in grade 3 and grade 4. Nevertheless, there was, as I said, a little bit of a difference in terms of the number of patients that stopped due to adverse events in the actual trial. So I think it's too early to say how quickly this is going to happen, but there's absolutely no doubt, according to the early comments by the panel and people we spoke to at ASCO, that standard care will change.
Yeah, if I might add, it's also clear that the data is so much better than GemCap. So even though the data might be adjusted down a little bit, it's clearly a very big step. And in addition, it was not only one data presentation on FOLFIRINOX; there were several. And there were also quite intriguing data showing FOLFIRINOX being used as a neoadjuvant, i.e. before surgery. And if you add neoadjuvants on top of the FOLFIRINOX data that Magnus just referred to, you might expect even better results. So from what we understand and from what the key opinion leaders are saying, this is going to be the new standard of care.
Right, thank you. That's actually very helpful. And obviously, so you're currently in a position where you need to sort of decide either go or no go. And I mean, if you're studying the next trial and, you know, this ultimately becomes standard of care. So I guess we basically need to make decisions right now, as I see. Okay, so thank you. I think that's helpful. So when it comes to revision of your sort of clinical R&D plans, so you mentioned specifically that mesothelioma trial could receive a boost by freed up resources. So is it sort of safe to assume that things could be run quicker in this particular indication for Oncos?
Well, we are currently evaluating the options that we have, but with more resources available to Oncos, we have the possibility of either extending the runway or allocating that money to Oncos, particularly the mesothelioma trial, which could then be expanded or speeded up. But at the moment, as you understand, this situation is new and we don't have decided exactly on which path to take.
Okay, so it's... Okay, I think that's all from my side.
Thank you.
Just a quick reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. We will take our next question from Patrick Ling, DNB. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. I also actually wanted to talk about sort of what you will do with your resources. But could you, I mean, now you take a decision quite rapidly after ASCO, it's about 1 week since they presented the data. What will you do with the rest of the TG platform? I mean, you're looking into colorectal cancer. Will everything there continue as before, or will you put even that indication a little bit more on the back burner?
Absolutely not. As you know, we have a trial, a phase one trial, running in Australia and New Zealand in colorectal cancer. That is a trial where we're also combining with a checkpoint inhibitor. And that readout is coming in the first half of 2019, and that is going to be an important data point for us in determining what to do further with colorectal cancer. Of course, it's not unthinkable that we do things in colorectal cancer even before we have the full data set in 2019. But as I mentioned, we are now looking at all our available options in the next weeks and months before we can tell you what the TG development plan will look like. But our ongoing trial in colorectal cancer with TG02 will continue as planned.
Okay, and what exactly do you mean that it's not feasible that you do something with colorectal even before you have the data in the first half of 2019? Are you referring to partnering discussions or anything like that?
No, what I mean is that now that we're not doing TGR-102, the randomized controlled trial in resective pancreatic cancer, at least not as planned, it means that we have the opportunity to look at all our options within mutant RAS and determine what the next step is going to be. And the next step might be in colorectal cancer.
Okay, great. And also, just coming back to the mesothelioma trial, I mean, if you put more resources into that trial, how long would it take for you to actually be able to speed it up? I mean, adding new sites do take some time and so on, and it's still a relatively rare disease. So could you maybe elaborate a little bit more about how you could focus more on that indication and what it could actually mean in the end for the timelines?
I think we have several ideas of how to expand and improve that trial, but it's a bit premature to give you any details. But it is thinkable to just expand the patients with more trials. It's thinkable to add more sites. It's also thinkable to add other combination regimes in additional arms.
Okay. And while you are talking about the ONCOS 102, could you maybe elaborate a little bit on what is happening with the two trials where you have development partners in the peritoneal malignancies and prostate cancer, if there's anything new there?
Magnus, do you want to give a brief update on what's happening with our collaboration trials?
Yeah, sure. So, morning, Patrick. So, for the study with ONCOS 1 and 2 and Duvalumab in collaboration with Cancer Research Institute and AstraZeneca, we've gone through the first dose escalation cohort. We have, and that means that we stop and follow those patients for 6 weeks, and we have in 2 weeks' time a safety meeting with the committee, and then provided everything is okay, we can continue recruiting into that trial at the next dose level. So that's going well. We have one additional site recruited in that study. As you know, this is a study that we don't manage ourselves, but it's managed by Ludwig Institute of Cancer Research and the Cancer Research Institute. The other collaboration study is one with the Czech biotech company called Socio, fully sponsored and paid for by Socio. They were just recruited their first patient in Prague. So it's just started.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will now take our next question from Klaus Palin from Redeye. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, and thank you for taking my questions. Most have already been answered, but just out of curiosity, what do you think is the reason why we see such an improvement also in the gemcitabine regimen in this PROG trial? Interesting to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, Klaus, hi, morning. We don't know that, but rest assured, we have our expert panel. I don't know if you came in from the beginning. We have a pretty eminent expert panel with U.S. and European members. They're actually right now looking at that very question. And I don't know if you were at ASCO or at this session when Prodige was presented, but it was one of those things that people asked as they came out of the session that, as you know, in Prodige, the median overall survival for gemcitabine was 35 months, and previously we haven't seen anything higher than 27 months in very large trials, equally large trials of 500-600 patients. So our experts are looking at that, and as I said, we're going to have a meeting with them in 2 weeks' time, and this is one of the questions we asked them to address, actually. It is important to understand if the population of Prodige was different. But going back to Øystein's point at the very beginning of this call, even if you discount the 7-8 months difference between previous performance of gemcitabine in this study, even if you discount those 7-8 months when it comes to the FOLFIRINOX arm, you end up still at somewhere 42-43 months median overall survival, which is still remarkably superior to anything else we've seen previously. So that's a question, as you said, that we will look at. And you know, if we get an answer from our experts on that, we will share that. That's something that not just you and us are interested in, but others are also interested in that question.
Okay, thank you very much, Magnus. Thank you.
Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Nuala Morin, BioWorld. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I just wonder, there are so many trials going on, so many different combinations. Aren't you worried that you're just going to be continually chasing what everyone else is doing?
Well, it depends on, it's Magnus, hi, morning. It depends on which indication you operate in. I think that what is quite interesting, if you look at this very disease, resected pancreas cancer, I don't know if you followed it for some time, but nothing has really happened since gemcitabine was set as a standard of care until last year when GemCap, a sort of slight variation on gemcitabine, was added. So for actually over 10 years, absolutely nothing's happened in terms of standard of care in this disease. If you look at another disease that we just talked about, mesothelioma or malignant pleural mesothelioma, as you know, we have a program with our oncolytic virus in that indication, where the standard of care, pemetrexed cisplatin, was set in 2003, so we have 15 years of nothing happening. And the only thing that's happened in that area is in the last year, we've seen two checkpoint inhibitor trials starting in that area, but there are actually no new data that's come through that influences standard care in 15 years in that disease. But having said that, if you then move on to melanoma as an example, so you may know that I was one of the people with Bristol-Myers Squibb who helped to develop Yervoy, the first checkpoint inhibitor that was launched in melanoma. A lot of things have happened, and it's very crowded, in particularly in first-line melanoma. So I think it depends on the indication that we are pursuing, and as I said, in mesothelioma, there's very little competition for us. If anything, we think that the new checkpoint inhibitor trials would be a very suitable combination for our virus if those come through well.
Thank you.
And this is Eric, Chief Financial Officer. I would just like to add to what Magnus is saying is that part of the reason why we see mesothelioma as the lead indication for our oncolytic virus is exactly what you're referring to. That's really an indication where there are no other viruses or vaccines or similar immune activators anywhere close to the stage where we're at in development. And we see that as a niche where we can sort of develop slowly and alone for a while and hopefully become a frontline treatment. There are checkpoint inhibitors in development, but they are welcome combination partners rather than competitors.
And a more general answer to your question is that both of our product candidates, they can be combined with the chemo and the checkpoint inhibitor. That's our value proposition. And no matter which chemo and no matter which checkpoint inhibitor, we can probably be added on top. Now, what happened in resected pancreatic cancer was that the standard of care, the chemo standard of care, turned out to be so much better, and the median overall survival is now taking so long. If you look at, you know, almost half of the patients are alive after 5 years. So making a trial in that exact indication is just unpracticable for a small biotech.
Okay, thank you.
It appears there are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, that concludes our conference call. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.